My name is Susan Alatrico, and I am going to offer a collage of sorts, a dharmet. Susan and I are going to share the time, so we have about 8 minutes each. On the last Friday of the month, there's an extended period of time for group discussion. So we're cutting our talks a little short, so we have more time to talk amongst ourselves. I wanted to start with something that happened to me on Saturday morning at 6:30 a.m. I woke up to my phone alarm ringing to take it out of its holder to stop the alarm, and I accidentally called 911. I didn't have my glasses on, and I could not turn it off. I could not hang up, and there's this squeal, you know, there's this sound. The dispatcher answered. And I immediately said, "I'm so sorry, it's a mistake." And I expected to hang up immediately, but I couldn't. She wanted my name, and I sheepishly said, "Susan." And she said, "Your last name?" I said, "Alatrico." And she said she just needed it for, you know, the record. And then she released the call. And I took that energy with me to the bathroom, and I had a bit of a flush of tears, because I realized that was quite a little event to happen with my morning before I had even woken up. And while I was sitting there, I realized something, that this magical little thing I had in my hand offered, I'm getting so much kindness. I immediately called this number, and in turn, immediately received help. That experience gave me more equanimity around my view of technology. Quite honestly, that wasn't going to be so much today. So I'm going to offer a focus on the fourth and fifth precepts to guide us toward skillfully using, mindfully using social media and technology. But first, as we usually start with a little story, I have a Zen horse story. A horse suddenly came galloping down the road. It seemed as though the man had somewhere important to go. Another man who was standing alongside the road shouted, "Where are you going?" And the man replied, "I don't know. Ask the horse." Maybe you've heard this before. The horse symbolizing our habit energy. We're just moving, following habits, not sure why. But pretty much our lives are consumed with that, which will actually be next month's focus on habit. It's how we're taught to live without mindfulness, just to keep on the run and doing things as we've always done them. Another quote attributed to a Chinese proverb, be careful, thoughts become words, words become actions, actions become habits, habits become character, and character becomes our destiny. But perhaps habit is not an entirely accurate use or the word in relation to social media. I want to try on the word spell. When we write, speak, we're casting spells. So says Yale professor Mike Zim. It's the root of spellum, which took on the term spell in the Middle Ages, meaning a charm or magical incantation. So like a spell, words we spell on social media have power to harm, to nurture, to influence, to soothe. So how do we use this power toward good and not fall under the spell? We have a spell of mindlessness as well, but also this influence that we have in our lives. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples of my habits. Email, for instance. And this is a really good one, because I learned how I was causing harm in this. So it was a pretty significant insight that I needed to have. So I was working on a project. I kept revising materials and sending them out for approval. I was involving a few people. I was trying to do it right. I wanted to be accepted, and I was trying to do it perfectly. And I sent a lot of emails. I thought everybody else was excited as I was. They were not. And I had to have a talk with a couple of wise teachers who said that I was causing harm. I did not know. I was not mindful. I didn't see that my mind was, you know, surrounded in doubt, and that I was wanting something. And so what's interesting, though, is whether I'm on the screen or relating to people in real life, the same things come up. I'm being left out here. I'm not good enough. You know, they don't like me. Doubt. I should be doing something else. So that's interesting. So that tells me it's not the object, it's my relationship, that subjective quality. So another thing I do when I'm alone, I'm a single woman, live by myself. I turn to social media for connection, and I don't want to read as much. Before I go to bed, I have virtual dessert, so to speak. I go to YouTube. I might watch a dance, look at baby animals or comedians. I was doing TikTok for a while, and I just found it too addicting. I mean, how many 30-second or less, 15-second images, experiences can you have in 30 minutes? A lot. I couldn't put it down. You know, there's a lot of talent on TikTok, and it was comforting. I was escaping. But it was unsatisfactory. I knew it was too much, so I put it down. Also, I have this habit of scanning the news at night, looking like for that one story, that one article that's going to prove truth is real. And it looks like this. I'm also a bit of a headline reader because it's so unsatisfactory to go on these news sites and you know, have to subscribe or wait for the ads to finish and experience, you know, the wheel that won't actually load the story. But on the other hand, I'm becoming more and more aware of how that's not nourishing and that's not where my path is pointed. So, but I'm not hard on myself. I'm not judging myself. I'm human. This is okay, you know, slowly but surely. But I'm pretty ignorant about social media. I don't use a lot of it like probably you all do. And I could probably easily have a relationship with the news by just having one subscription. But I don't want to pay for it. So I put up with the eye candy of like watching these headlines. And I know it's not satisfying. So it's said that the Buddha directs with a light for those who would listen. And I say the light is shining on the precepts or through the precepts. And I turn to the precepts, or I'll call the mindfulness trainings, for grounding in my life. You know, I want my life to be about non-harm. I can't do it by just this alone. I need to be reminded of what I aspire to, what these ethical principles I want my practice and my life to be about. And simply, they take care of ourselves and others. They help me act on what I want my life to be about. And I love the way Thich Nhat Hanh describes the precepts, as I said, the mindfulness trainings. And I want to read the fourth and fifth. Oops, I forget to start my clock. Speaking of mindfulness. So the fourth precept or mindfulness training is called loving speech and deep listening. And you might want to close your eyes as you listen and feel what resonates for you. Like, I take this on, or I do want to take this on. In this training, we are aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others. I vow to cultivate loving speech, deep listening, in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of our suffering. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I vow to learn to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I'm determined not to spread news that I know not to be true, and not to criticize or condemn things of which I'm not sure. I will refrain from uttering words that cause division or discord, or that can cause the family or the community to break. I make all efforts to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. And the fifth mindfulness training I am particularly taken by because of the quality of nourishment and healing, and that's the title of it. So again, taking in what you're listening to and how that might resonate with you. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I vow to cultivate good health, both physically and mentally, for myself, my family, and my society, my world, by practicing mindful eating, drinking, consuming, which he extends to social media and technology. I vow to ingest only items that preserve peace, well-being, and joy in my body, mind, consciousness, and the collective body of the entire, you know, sentient world that we live in. I'm determined not to use alcohol or any other intoxicant, or to ingest foods or other items that contain toxins, such as certain TV programs. This was written before. You won't hear the word social media or iPhone in this particular example, though they are updated from time to time to be relevant to the current world. And he goes on, magazines, books, films, conversations. I'm aware that the damage to my body, my consciousness, betrays my ancestors, my parents, my society, and future generations. I understand that a proper diet is crucial for self-transformation and the transformation of society. So I need these trainings to remain balanced, to look at and refresh my life about how do I meet this, you know, this social technology that seems so out of my control, this brilliantly designed technology that's intimately designed to trigger the reward centers in the brain. We were just talking about earlier, when we let people into the rooms, we get a little competitive. It's fun to hear that ding and go to it. You know, it's the same place where addictions are triggered in the brain, any addiction. It's where dopamine is stimulated. So, you know, these precepts are asking us, as Arv was pointing to, you know, be mindful. What is the equanimity that we can bring? We're not necessarily going to refrain from using these social media technologies. On retreat, we do. But I worded it, can I pick up the screen with both hands, witness and know its potential to destroy, harm, but also to nurture and connect? And same, can I pick myself up with both hands and know what's happening to me? How am I living my life? How is it feeling in my body when I read that in those headlines? You know, I like the phrase, go against yourself. Like, go against that habit. So I read an entire news story online, and I noticed in that moment, I didn't want to skim and scan. It's like, that was satisfying. Okay, I did it. Leave it alone. When I'm lonely and I want to escape, I acknowledge, okay, I'm feeling this way. I'm going to go to look for a funny video. And I'm aware of my body when it's contracted. And I get to ask, is this nourishing? You know, is this nourishing? And I get to choose. But I can investigate my mind and look for where I'm craving, avoiding, and just choose mindfully, okay, this is what I'm going to do right now without judgment, right? This is our path. And so I ask that you each of us gets to decide where, what resonates with us and how much I want to take on. I remember for a long time, I wanted to leave my practice on the cushion. It wasn't alive in my life, but it seeps in. Mindfulness seeps in, but it needs intention. And these precepts or these mindfulness trainings show me how I want to engage in the world. So here's what I want to say, and this kind of reflects on the movie, the social media, the social dilemma. So we need screens, but let's remember that we are the product that's being sold here. We are the extractable resource, and that we're working with something that knows how to exploit vulnerability in human psychology, especially the young people before teenage. So using mindfulness, we can look under the spell or be mindful. We're casting spells, and so is the mind and social media. And by making our practice our life and our life our practice, we can better direct it toward peace, ease, and freedom for all. And my final line from social media is, let's not be the last generation to know we're in the matrix. I don't know how long that was, but I hope I haven't intruded on your time because I was not paying attention to. I'm so sorry, Sue. Here we go.
No problem.
Okay.
Thank you
so much.
So I'm Sue Zappel, and I'm doing Act Two. There are, as we know, huge benefits and advantages of technology and social media. I could not run my business without the computer. I love listening to podcasts, books on tape, Dharma talks. I love not having to wait for my newspaper to arrive in the morning to know what happened at the January 6th attack on the Capitol. I like connecting with people on Facebook. And of course, for these 10 months, look at what we've been able to do creating Sangha together, which I just adore. Sunday morning, Monday night, Tuesday morning, Thursday, you know, all of those connections. But we also know that there can be some real serious downsides. Along with Susan, I recently watched that documentary, The Social Dilemma. And so we've learned how these social technologies and social media have been designed. They're partly designed to monetize that whole process so that the advertisers can make a lot of money off of us. They do that by convincing us that our lives aren't enough as is, that we're not enough, that unless we are connecting and consuming. And they make demands on us. There's an urgency regarding time. Respond now. Look at this now. Buy this now. Talk to me now. There's a demand and an urgency regarding information. You need to know this. This information is really important. And in fact, if you don't know it, you're going to be really stuck. And there's this repeated message that hooks right into our wanting. You need this. You need to be seen. You need to buy this. So there are benefits and drawbacks. But full disclosure, on Friday, I called Susan in a panic because I feel like I am a lab rat, not being zapped by electricity, but being notified and sent texts and emails. And this pull is, I'm being pulled. I see, you know, all the selfing, the craving for connection. Part of me knows better, but I also see in my own life and practice how mindfulness can be really fleeting. So here I am, a lab rat, and I'm not as nearly connected as many of you. I mean, I had my first computer in my 40s. I wrote my master's thesis on a memory typewriter. But here I am giving a little dharmet on this and knowing that the hook of technology is right here embedded in my life. So I'm consider myself a bit of a mess around technology. But as we all know, we learn often when we're right in the middle of the mess. So I've been practicing with it, and mostly what I've come up with is some practice points that I have them written down, and hopefully we'll continue practicing with them. And that's what I want to offer this morning. I want us to start with the fourth precept in terms of setting an intention of do not lie. And I'm not meaning about relationally. I mean, do not lie to ourselves. So let's look at with as little delusion as possible and as best as we can to assess our own relationship with the different social media and technology. So we start with that real honest, okay, nobody else is looking. I'm going to just look at what's my relationship here. Then we go to the first precept around do no harm. There are so many opportunities for it. And the practice points that I'd like to point out is the first one is what makes it so easy in your life that you get pulled in? Susan described a couple of her hook points. For me, I really can feel that desire to be seen, to be validated and liked. You know, sometimes I think, oh, it's the residual of the grief that I lost my life partner a few years ago. But it really is that habitual longing. So I ask you to ask yourself, what's the biggest pull for you? And then feel that pull and pause. You know, pausing is probably the main meditation technique that we've all been taught about. Pause when you know it, feel it, and maybe even practice putting a response off for a few minutes. Second precept, which Susan talked about so beautifully in her experience around email, about, you know, the second precept of refraining from taking what is not freely offered and thinking about other people's time and energy and how it's so easy in social media to just assume, oh, you want my all these texts, you want all my emails if we're working together. Yeah, instead of just keeping all my drafts to myself, I'm sending you draft 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know if that's what you meant, Susan, but I identified with that. And you know, sometimes with phone calls it's really easy to say, hey, hi, do you have some time and interest right now for chatting? But it's harder to do with other social media. So we just bring with us kind of that respect for other people's time and energy. How are we pulling them in? The third precept around using sexual energy. I remember when for 5 years I was on the staff of the Teen Mindfulness Retreat. This wonderful week with all of these kids learning mindfulness. And when we all took the precepts together, we changed the language to be mindfulness about flirting. And so, you know, that kind of flirting energy that sends out a message, but it's kind of nuanced and it's not exactly direct. And you know, how do you use that own flirting sexual energy, other energy with people? And to ask ourselves, so here's the practice point of what kind of energy am I sending out? And is it beneficial or is it harmful? And imagine if you can, how it might be received. If I had longer, I could tell you about my experience on dating sites being a senior. Talk about a minefield of dealing with the precepts, but we don't have the time for that one. The fourth precept, coming back to the do not lying, this one, you know, really seeing the humanity in others. I think we probably all, because we're practitioners, know that when there's an email or a text that just hits you, instead of reacting, we generally put our response in the draft folder. and then we sleep on it, or at least go get a cup of tea and let it sit there. And then we come back and read it and go, oh, would I say that to the person face to face? Who is this person I'm responding to? You know, yesterday we had this great day of mindfulness on the Brahma Vihara. So we access our metta. We access the compassion, you know, that we access that part of us of seeing another person that we all want to be happy and healthy and content in our lives. So that practicing, who is that person that we're going to be responding to? And the fifth precept or training, as Susan was describing, is refraining from things that cloud the mind. When I am in a Netflix binging mode, my mind is captured. And for me, as I was looking at what happens, how do I get captured? For me, a lot of it has to do with being in this indecision place, like, oh, it's 8 o'clock at night. You know, if I start reading, I'm going to fall asleep, and it's too early to fall asleep. And, you know, my knitting project, I don't want to do it, or this or that. And, you know, so turning on Netflix is easy. So the practice point for me is, again, pausing. How can I make the most thoughtful decision I can, as best as I'm able? And if I decide to go with Netflix, do it for the joy of it. One of my Dharma friends calls it her nightly refuge. She relaxes. She's had all her whole to-do list. It's the end of the day. She's just enjoying what social media and technology and Netflix has to offer. So the overall practice idea is kind of what Susan said as well. What are the benefits and what is the potential harm? And coming back to what Arv was pointing to in his meditation about what does all of this pulling and getting pulled, what does that feel like in the body? You know, yesterday we were talking at the Day of Mindfulness about really being in touch with how joy feels in the body, how equanimity feels in the body, how metta feels in the body. And we know that we come to be really familiar with that. Well, how about becoming familiar with how that pull feels in the body when you were just kind of yanked and there you go and mindfulness is out the window? Or maybe not. Maybe it's still hanging around. But so I offer those practice suggestions. I'm going to practice them myself, and maybe I won't be such a mess about social media. We'll see. Thanks very much for your attention. We've got some time
Thank
now.
You,
Susan is going to help break us into breakout groups so that you get a chance to talk about your own experience with technology and social media.
All right. Just bear with me, and you might want to think about the question, which is, you know, what are the benefits to you and the harm you see, and how could the precepts live in your life? Suze, would you like to add anything?
Nope. That's succinct and right on.
All right, everyone, it's your opportunity to reflect, talk to us about what came to mind, what you're taking away, or if you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you.
I can go ahead. This is Carol.
Hi,
Susan.
Hi, Carol.
I thought what I took away the most important is the pause. And just thinking about, it's not just technology and thinking about, and there's definitely my, you know, being the hook in terms of technology, but just the hook in terms of wanting to immediately respond. So that, I think both you and Suze emphasized that. And I would just like to say that the whole idea of, I think there's a lot less harm that can happen if you pause and make sure that, and probably more good too, and probably less response too. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. Yeah, because, and then the pause is also a gift to yourself of, you know, well, what else is happening here? You know, what do I really want to do?
What is my awareness?
Where's my awareness? What's happening in my body? All of those things that can arise once we just give ourselves a little break. Yeah.
Oh, is that a hand I see? Steve and Bill? Oh.
Myself, I was just looking at my bruise.
Oh. Okay. You can share if you'd like. Oh, I didn't mean your bruise. Ow, that looks like a serious accident.
Okay. Oh, I should have paused. I took you literally. Sorry.
No, it's the power of the word, right? Our words.
Last week, Lauren in her talk said these words that we can practice valuing doing nothing, practice being in the void instead of filling it, which I just think is a lovely way of putting what Carol was saying about the pausing, you know, and just, and see where that the simplicity, the stillness is. I mean, we're going to continue loving technology, and it continues to feed us in some wonderful ways, but just knowing where we are vis-a-vis it is real helpful. Anybody else? Yeah, Nikhil, hi.
Hey, I think one interesting thing that came up during our group conversation, when we were talking about do no harm, and when you, Suze, and Susan were talking about it in the context of, you know, responding to texts and emails and considering how you respond, I think one interesting thing that came up in our conversation was also non-response, and how there's this expectation of kind of this immediate response with texts and emails, and if you don't respond immediately, it can sort of feel like rejection. But oftentimes, you know, there can also be, it can almost feel like this burden of all these things to respond to. Mm-hmm. And so kind of keeping that in mind, and, you know, maybe, you know, I think at least, you know, for me personally, I often, I find it difficult to just respond to texts and emails, and I'll often, you know, see an email and think, oh, I need to respond to that, and then it'll be a couple of weeks and I still haven't responded. And, you know, trying to think about, like, setting expectations and, like, communicating to people that, hey, maybe I, you know, this isn't, you know, I might not be the most responsive communicator on these, and helping them know that, you know, that's kind of trying to help set that expectation to help minimize harm in a way, I guess.
Yeah. Boy, that's a very good point about what happens when we don't respond. And what happens when other people don't respond to us? You know, that where our mind goes with all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
I just, you know, the other thing that I'm reminded of is when I have a sense of urgency, I usually, when I act on it, it causes more harm than good. That sense of urgency, when my mind has that sense of urgency. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you for, I heard that in your share too. Well, I'm looking at the clock and I see we have 4 minutes left, and I know Arv has information to share with you as we close, but if there is something one of you would like to just kind of close with, Cheryl? Oh,
Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, I just wanted to offer appreciation and gratitude for today, for the meditation, for these speeches, and really for the group being together to be able to talk about this in depth. So yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, thank you, everybody. Next month, another focus, but this won't go away, right?